Welcome back for another episode of Errant Adventures, the solo actual play podcast where stories are told at the speed of dice. With me, Steve Morrison, your game master and solo player. Now come on, let's grab the dice and see where our story goes. Welcome back to Chapter 5 of Book 1, Meridian. Last time, Sejana Lushale faces off against three hired guns sent by GenCorp to recover Calivar Rin and his stolen information. Weapons are drawn and shots are fired as Sejana guides Rin to cover. The shootout is brief as the former Imperial Special Service operative makes short work of the three Corpo thugs. Sejana makes a copy of the data and hides it within her Technomancer gauntlet before Cassadin Security shows up. She and Rin are taken into custody along with Ayati and the Haldren captain of the Howlin' Wolf, Einar Stargleam. They are interviewed by Inspector Hallow, who seems adversarial, but eventually reveals that she has concerns with how quickly GenCorp has jumped on the situation. She warns Sejana to get out of the system while things blow over and releases the crew while retaining Rin and the data strip. On the Wolf, Sejana declares her intention to leave the ship, but Ayati and Einar agree. They want to help her reveal GenCorp's malfeasance. Sejana shows them a comm substation in orbit around the planet Felicia and tells them they have to infiltrate it and transmit the necessary data to a contact in the media. As the Wolf lifts off, the crew begins planning their approach. The Howlin' Wolf, a mid-sized transport vessel, lifts off from its docking bay on the Heraklion Interstellar Starport. Having received its authorization to leave the atmosphere, the Howlin' Wolf rises up towards the heavens and emerges from the atmosphere into the darkness, the vastness of the deep. As the Aster Drive spools up and the ship's acceleration increases, on the flight deck of the Howlin' Wolf, Sejana, Ayati, and Einar are looking at a display. It's a display of the substation relay. It's a small station. There are only a couple levels to it. And as Sejana points out, there's only space for six of these guards aboard. She points to one section and says, "They operate in shifts. Two at a time. Two sleeping, two off-duty, and two at the controls. If we do things correctly, we should only have to deal with, at most, four of the guards."
"I'm curious about what your plan is to get on board. Surely we can't just dock."
"No. See, this is the most difficult part of this operation. I plan to create a bridge from our docking bay to this storage area here." And she points at the display, and there's a small room that is off the main corridor that is, for all intents and purposes, used for storage. "Aina, you and I will cross over through this bridge and infiltrate the station. It's the only way to be sure that we get in without setting off the alarms."
"A bridge? What exactly does that mean?"
"And just out of curiosity, how close do you need to be for that bridge to attach?"
"I will open a passage into the void through which we will cross into the station."
"Whoa, you're talking about leaving here and just stepping through nothingness? Is that, am I understanding that correctly?"
"It is a very technical thing, Aina, but trust me, I've done it before."
"That's reassuring."
"As far as your question, Ayati, we must get within 5,000 meters.
Ayati whistles and says, "That's pretty damn close. If you want me to get in that close, I might set off those drones that you were talking about, and then we'll be in trouble. I won't be able to stick around in that area."
"No. That's why I think part of this plan is going to involve some very delicate flying. That's why you're staying here."
"All right, well, let me start doing some calculations, see what I can come up with."
"Good. Once we're on the station, Einar and I will neutralize any of the guards that we come across. We'll have to use stunners. Then we can access the database, and we can transmit whatever information we need to my contact.
Well, is that all? All right, well, what if you can't make this bridge between our ship and this substation? Is that something you're worried about?
It is possible that I will not be able to create a stable enough portal, in which case, the second plan is for you and I to suit up in our vac suits, jettison ourselves out into space, fire thrusters, and drift towards the station. If we go in on low power, we should be able to avoid their sensors. Once we're on the station, we'll have to breach, and at that point, we'll have a short window of time before the system goes into lockdown.
So, not the ideal plan.
No, the portal will work, I promise you. But unless you have other questions, I should go prepare. It will take me some time. Well, we've got a few hours before we even get close to Felicia, so why don't you two go start getting ready, and I'll let you know as we're getting close.
Very well.
So, as a technomancer, Sejana Lushale has the ability to create a sort of portal from her current location to another location. It's a form of teleportation. Her plan revolves around whether or not she is able to open this portal from the Howlin' Wolf into this station. So let's take a look at our psionics. Sejana has a high psi stat of 12, which is good, which means she gets a +2 bonus to this. She just has the basic skill level in teleportation. So she is going to only be rolling this check at a +2. Now, the way that this works is in order to teleport just a basic teleportation, you have to get, an average check. To teleport with clothing, but not with armor, and up to 10 kilograms of equipment, the teleportation check is increased to a difficulty of 10 and costs an additional 2 psi points. Technomancers are able to teleport people with armor, but I think when they're doing so, it is a larger group of them, and they're able to pool their efforts together in order to create these portals. So Sejana and Einar are going to be going into this mission with very limited equipment on them. So they're not going to be wearing any armor, and they are only going to be able to have 10 kilograms of equipment on them, which is plenty of equipment for them. They're going to carry a couple of stunners with them and whatever hacking equipment that Sejana thinks she might need in order to access the systems within this substation. So this is going to be a difficulty of 10 plus, but because she has some time to prepare, I'm going to take more time. And so that is going to give her a dice modifier. So she's going to get +2 for her dice modifier, plus her 2 for her skill, and then she is trying to hit a 10. So let's go ahead and roll our dice and see if she can create this portal. That's going to determine how successful this mission is going to be. Here we go. Easily. So she's got a 10 on the dice, +4 is a 14 total. I also have to spend 4 psi points, which is going to take her down to a rating of 8. That's okay. She is in the cargo hold on the Howling Wolf, and she spends time taking out this small box from her equipment. It's an obsidian box with seemingly no seams on it. And she waves her gauntleted hand over it, and the box clicks and separates. And she lifts the lid off, and there are a series of implements inside. For her purposes, she clears a small area in the cargo bay and pulls out this piece of chalk that has a slight irradiated glow to it. And she crouches down in the middle of this area that she's cleared in the cargo bay, and she draws out a hexagon. At each point, she makes these symbols, and it takes her a good hour of drawing and checking and rechecking. And there are a couple of times where she goes back to that box and she lifts up the top layer, and there's a book underneath that she pulls out and opens up and leafs to a certain page, and she's reading it over. And then she goes back over her drawing and makes some adjustments, and then again assesses based off of the diagrams in her book, and then makes a few more adjustments. And after a few more hours, Einar enters the cargo bay and is watching as she is performing essentially what is a ritual. After a few moments, she stops and looks at Einar and says,
"I think our portal is ready to be opened once we're close enough."
He looks down at the drawings on the floor and shakes his head and says,
"This is just a little too weird for me. So you're telling me that you can open a portal to anywhere and walk through it? Walk through walls, walk through doors, walk through mountains? How is this possible? I know you technomancers and your void magic is all secretive and ancient knowledge, but this seems like it would be an important thing to know, that technomancers can just cross the boundaries of the deep and get wherever they want to go."
"It's not so simple as that, Ina. This is a very difficult ritual to undertake, and very few technomancers indulge in it on a whim. I cannot promise that when we cross through the void, it will not affect us. It is very likely it will make you sick, at least. I've done this enough that I've become somewhat inured to it, but I must warn you."
"Titan's asshole, girl. You're telling me that I'm going to walk through the void and come out the other side vomiting? You're not really encouraging me to join you on this endeavor."
"If you remember, I did try to talk you out of it. In fact, I wanted to exclude you all entirely, but you talked me into helping. You asked to be part of this. This is what it's going to take."
All right. Well, I've got my gear," and he points to his armor and just a whole bunch of stuff that he's dragged out,
at which point Sejana shakes her head and says,
"I'm very sorry, Ina, but you're going to have to leave most of that behind. You see, traveling through the void, it is... there are energies within the void that are drawn. Think of it like throwing a stone in a pond. The larger the stone, the more ripples it causes, and the more likely other things are going to be aware of this passage. We must go with as little gear as we can. We'll wear our deep skins, we'll carry our stunners. I will carry some computer kit in case the system gets locked down. Other than that, it's mostly just going to be us."
"I see. So, just you and me jumping through the void." "Yeah, I know. I talked you into letting us help. Starting to regret that a little bit. It's okay. Ayadi and I agreed that we want to help you. And we're going to. So let's get this done. Speaking of which, I think Ayadi's got her calculations all finished, if we want to go check in with her."
So the Howling Wolf is soaring through the deep between Cassida and Felicia. Ayadi Kailana has done a whole lot of math to try and figure out exactly what approach they should make. You know, I could just say that she's made that math, or we could roll some dice and see exactly how well she does. So I think I'm actually going to make this a task chain, but it's going to be a task chain that she is doing with herself. So we're going to roll an astrogation check to determine their trajectory and the trajectories of all of the orbital bodies that are swirling around Felicia, because Ayati's plan is to try to set a course and essentially shut the ship down so that she can just drift the ship right past this substation without setting off the station alarms. So this is going to be, I think, just an average check, because she has hours to do the math. She has scans of the area around Felicia. So I don't think that it is all that difficult. So we're just going to call it an average check. And again, because we're taking extra time, I think that she's going to get a DM plus 2 on this. So it's going to be a plus 3 total because her astrogation is 1. Let's see what happens. 5 on the dice plus 3 is an 8. So that is exactly on. So she does the math and she figures out the exact trajectory, the exact point at which she needs to cut their thrust, and what points in the approach she needs to fire the thrusters in order for them to drift past this station. So because she succeeded with 0 effect on that, she is going to get a plus 1 because of the task chain. So now we're going to make the pilot check, and this is going to determine how well she is able to fly the ship in. Now, Ayati is a crack pilot. So she has a level 1 in spacecraft piloting, plus her dexterity of 2, which is a total of 3, plus 1 for the task chain. So this is going to be plus 4 on this roll. I think this is a harder check because she's trying to thread a needle here. So we're going to say that this is going to be a difficult check, and that will be a target number of 10. Plus 4, here we go. 7 on the dice. Plus 4 is an 11, so that is a success with a margin of 1, so a pretty marginal success, but a success nonetheless. So let's go ahead and envision this. The Howlin' Wolf is on approach towards Felicia. Ayati has cut the engines and has begun some minor adjustments to their deceleration. At this point, the ship is almost down to minimal power, and Ayati is sitting in her pilot seat, hands on the throttle and the joystick, making minor adjustments, tapping buttons on the panel, pressing a thruster here or there, just gliding the starship towards this mass of satellites and ships that are coming and going from Felicia. Felicia is the planet in the Cassidan system that houses most of the major corporations and their factories, their research plants. There is an incredible amount of shipping that comes and goes from the planet Felicia. Guiding the Howlin' Wolf in, Ayati is focused, intense, watching all of the screens and panels, making minor adjustments here and there, predicting the trajectories of ships coming and going, and the projected trajectories of the satellites that are circling around the planet, including this GenCorp substation relay that they are aiming towards. It's another hour of intense focus and piloting as Ayati brings the ship slower and slower, just a hair of a thruster burn here or there, bringing the ship closer and closer. She turns at one point to Sejana as they are closing in on the very, very close 5,000 meter mark. And she says, "I've slowed the ship down enough that I can keep it within 5,000 meters of that station for about 7 to 10 minutes. So if you want to come back the way you're going in, you're going to have to be fast." "I appreciate that, Ayati. I am in awe of your piloting. This is truly incredible." "Well,
You don't get to be one of the best scout pilots out there for nothing.
I've often wondered, why did you leave the scout service? There's a shadow that crosses over Ayati's face, and she says, you best get down to the cargo bay if you're going to make this jump over there. We're getting close.
Sejana doesn't miss that shadow across her face, but now is not the time to dig into that. So she merely leans forward and places a hand on Ayati's shoulder and squeezes ever so gently and says,
excellent piloting. Thank you for doing this.
And then she turns and heads back down into the cargo bay. A few minutes later, Ayati's counting down the distance to that outer edge. And Sejana is standing just outside of this hexagon on the floor. She's adjusting some dials on the gauntlet on her arm. And then she, in the air, begins to draw that same emblem. Behind her, Einar is watching. And for a moment, he feels this sense of voyeurism as he watches the technomancer trace these lines through the air. And purplish-green energy begins to spill out of these symbols etched on the floor of his cargo bay. They rise up and swirl until there is this ovular opening. And I say opening, but really it just looks like darkness, emptiness beyond. Einar shifts uncomfortably as he watches. Sejana finishes the circuit, drawing this emblem, and then turns to him and says, are you ready? Einar shakes his head, but steps forward anyways.
You're sure about this?
Sejana smiles, that cold knife-like smile, and says, it's the fastest way. She removes the geometric-shaped technomancer mask from her side and attaches it to her face. He says,
I don't need one of those, do I?
She shakes her head, then reaches out, grabs hold of his shoulder, and with her left hand, her gauntleted hand, she reaches out and touches the portal, and it's like a membrane that she has to force her way through. And as her arm disappears through it, she steps through and Einar feels himself being dragged through this strange sensation, this membranous passage. Instantly, his senses are filled with ozone, with darkness, a darkness unlike anything he's experienced before. And he's been a spacer for a long time. He's stared out into the deep, but this darkness is deeper and darker even than the vastness of space. And just like that, it's over. They step through to the other side, and they're in this small, dark storage area. And Einar has to make an endurance check because he's never stepped through a void portal before, and it's rough. So this is going to be, I think, a relatively easy check. So I'm going to set the target number at 6. He is a pretty hardy Haldren, but I'm going to roll 2d6. He has no adds for this because he has no bonuses in endurance. So just what's on the dice. 8 is on the dice. He feels this twisting in his stomach, like being in a seat when the bottom of the world falls out and you fall. For a moment, he feels this urge to vomit everywhere, but he clamps down on that, closes his jaw, he grits his teeth, and manages to keep everything in. He leans forward a little bit and is breathing heavily. And then he looks up at Sejana and says,
that wasn't so bad.
Sejana smiles at him and says,
you've handled it well. All right, we're in. And as far as I can tell, they are none the wiser. Let's do this quickly.
So she is going to quietly open the door and listen. So we're going to do a recon check. This is average check, plus 3 for her, 7 on the dice, plus 3 is 10. So she is successful. So she listens at the door. Now, we know that there are two guards who are actively in the control room of this relay. There are two guards who are probably sleeping, and there are two guards who are off duty. So the question is, are those two guards who are off duty, are they in any way going to impede Sejana and Einar as they progress towards the control room? I think it's 50-50 because they could be just wandering around at the moment, or they could be engaged in some activity. They could be working out or watching, you know, some quick vid or whatever. But there's a possibility that they're going to be in a place that Sejana and Einar are going to have to pass in order to get to this control room. So I'm going to roll 50-50. If it's 50 or less, the answer is yes, they are in the way. Here we go. 74 is a no. So Sejana quietly opens the door and listens. It's pretty quiet. She can hear a little bit down the corridor coming from an access hatch that leads down to the deck below what sounds like two people sparring. There's the active sounds of combat going on. Doing a little mental math of what this relay setup might be, she assumes that that is most likely their training room where they exercise and maintain their physical fitness. And so Sejana is pretty confident that the two guards who are off duty are currently engaged in a very intense sparring bout, and they're not really paying attention to what's going on out here. So she gestures to Einar, and the two of them creep out from the storage room and begin making their way towards the control room. It's a quiet hallway. Small. There's only maybe 10 meters along. Once she reaches that door, she pulls out the stunner, gestures for Einar to do the same, and she is going to open the door and move in. They've infiltrated this station without setting off any alarms, so I don't think there's any reason why the door to the control room would be locked, so I'm not even going to roll on that. So the door opens. The only question I have is, are both of those guards in here? Because the shifts are 2 by 2 by 2, but maybe one of the guards got up to go use the bathroom or go fix themselves a snack or something like that. It's not guaranteed that there are two in here. I'm going to say that it is unlikely that one of the guards is missing from this room. So it would have to be 25 or less to get a yes. Roll the percentile dice. 48 is a no. So both guards are in there. The door slides open and Sejana steps through confidently. One of the guards who is sitting with his back to her is just kind of reviewing some security footage that has been beamed up from the Gen Corp headquarters. The other one is sitting with his feet up on the desk, looking at a quick screen, and he kind of lazily glances over to see who's coming in to see them while they're on duty. And before he has a chance to react, Sejana shoots him with the stunner. So this is going to be gun combat. She has energy weapons at a rank of 1, plus her dexterity of 1 is a 2. So here we go. 2d6 plus 2. 7 on the dice. Plus 2 is a 9 for a hit. So she successfully hits, and the way that stunning works is you just subtract the damage from the target's endurance, and if it drops them to 0, they are stunned. And they're stunned for a number of rounds equal to the effect. So the stunner is 3d6, no adds. I'm going to say that these guards have an endurance of 8, so as long as she gets 8 or more, this guy is going to be stunned. 10, 12, 13 for that one effect means that The one that she shoots is stunned. He gets hit by this stunning blast and he freezes up as his muscles all tighten at the same time. And he just is leaning there in that chair and he starts to slip out of it. Einar steps in next to Sejana and takes a shot at the other guy. He does not have energy weapons, so he is just going to have to use his gun combat at level 0. And unfortunately, he has a dexterity of minus 1. So he's rolling this at a minus 1. Here we go. Oh, wow. 9 on the dice, minus 1 is an 8. So he still successfully hits this guy. So 3d6. Again, if he gets 8 or more damage, the guy is stunned. Oh, wow. 17 points of damage. That was 2 sixes and a 5 on 3d6. As he steps around, the other guy, hearing his buddy get stunned, turns around and instead of like reaching for the alarm or anything like that, he just kind of like turns around confused. And Einar center mass shoots him with the stunner. And he also seizes up and slumps over. The two of them step into the control room and Sejana hits the button, closing the door behind her, sealing it. Now she will lock it. And then she says, secure them. And she is going to head over to the computer system. So they have successfully entered the control room on this station. Sejana heads over and pats one of them down, pulls out a security key card, and sits down at the console. Now, I think because they did this with minimal effort, with minimal alarms, essentially with no one having any idea that they're there, the computer system is wide open. So I'm going to make an electronics computer check, but it's not to hack into the system. It's basically for Sejana to see how quickly she can scan through the data and find the information that they're looking for. I'm going to leave it at an average check. I don't think that it is easier per se because she is sifting through data, but she does have an idea of what she's looking for, so I don't think it's marginally more difficult. So she has a level 1 rank in her computer skill, and she's got a 2 in her intellect, so it's going to be a total of plus 3 on this. We're looking for an 8. 7 on the dice, plus 3 is a 10. So success with an effect of 2. This mission is going really well. So Sejana is scanning through the information. She finds what she's looking for pretty quickly. And that is a record of the comm logs being transmitted from the headquarters, including orders from the top-level executives to silence Kalivar Rin and to lock down any further information. She copies that information over and she begins sending out that data to her contact on Cassida. And then she's looking through a little bit more and she finds the lot numbers for the NL-myosin that has been tainted. And she finds records of those shipments being transported off planet through the Celerity conduit to a neighboring system. And so she transmits that information as well. And then she is looking for information on Rin when she sees a reference to an outside company that has been hired by GenCorp to quote unquote take care of the Rin problem. And that company is called Verdant Consulting. Has Sejana heard of Verdant Consulting before? I think it's a small chance. So 10 or less. 25 is a no. She hasn't. But there's something about the way that that communication is written that makes her realize that this Verdant Consulting is a fixer firm. They are the people that corporations hire to clean up their messes. So she files that information away, and then she shuts everything down and turns back to Einar. He's looking at her expectantly, and she says, "It's done. We got what we came for."
"Good. Only about 6 minutes. Impressive. All right, so we going back the way we came?"
Sejana nods and says, "Yes, yes, we are." And she is going to attempt to open a portal back. Now, here's the thing. She doesn't have all the fancy work that she did to set up the portal to get back. And she had to spend some side points to get here, which means she doesn't have a modifier anymore. So to get back, she's got to roll a 10 on the dice straight up. It's not looking great. 2d6, zero adds. Here we go. 6 on the dice is a failure. She is going to lose 4 more psi points because even though she didn't succeed, she still spends those psi points on the ability. She turns some dials and then quickly begins to trace that emblem once again. Once she finishes, they both wait in silence for a moment. And then Einar turns to her and says,
"That's supposed to be working, right?"
And Sejana turns back to Einar and says, "Looks like we may have to find a different way off the station."
Thanks for listening to Errant Adventures. If you enjoyed the show, please spread the word. And if you want to support the show directly, leave me a review or support me on Patreon at patreon.com/errantadventures. You can also buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/errantadventures. If you want to interact with me, my handle on all the socials is @errantsolopod, or you can email me at errantsolopod@gmail.com. I also post short fiction and campaign-related materials on my website, errantadventurespod.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you in the deep, liars.